We have a very, very special guest with us this morning. We're going to be talking about politics, what's going on in America this hour. And Yvonne Davis, who is well-known internationally, recognized as a leader throughout her remarkable 28-year career. She has spearheaded initiatives that impact social and political change to thousands worldwide, a hard-hitting columnist. And she has been all over the world. And, Dan, we are fortunate to have her with us this morning.
She's in our Touch Points Rehab interview chair. Yvonne, good morning.
Good morning. Buongiorno. Come stai?
Looking good.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You worked in the U.S. State Department, right?
I was a long-term contractor for the U.S. Department of State, and I also promoted public diplomacy under George W. Bush and Barack Obama for 16 years. So that the way I, although I didn't serve in the military, the way I have served my country is by doing that work. And it's been such an honor, a humbling honor to do that work.
Well, we got quite a show going on now.
Yes, I know.
So what do you think?
What do you think? What are some of your thoughts right now about what's going on?
The leader of the free world is supposed to condemn injustice, is supposed to condemn hatred of any form, and he has not done that. And I don't want to hear about moral equivalency. I don't want to hear anything. When you see white supremacists, KKK, neo-Nazis, people come forward, skinheads, whoever was there to do what happened, it put a blemish on this nation in such a way, pain. And so as a leader, as the president of the United States, it was his job when it first happened to appear on television wherever he was and say, I need to take a pause and talk about what's happening in our nation. And he did not do that. And it is a big disappointment.
And he did it later.
He did it later.
And that was too late.
Because
I said
of
that
the media
morning.
Attack, everything that took place, and all of a sudden he came on board after the fact. But then he walked it back. And so there's an issue there in regards to judgment. There's an issue there in regards to leadership. And when I saw my dear friends, George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, issue a statement together condemning what happened, and then you had President Obama with his tweet, and by the way, his tweet has been retweeted more times in history than any other tweet because of this incident. We need to arrest this issue. But it's hard to do that when you have a leader who sets a precedent to say that somehow it's okay. And so we as people, you know I'm Republican, you as people, we need to condemn it on the spot.
Now, is he being ill-served by his advisors? Why wouldn't his advisors, maybe they did, before he went out and spoke initially on Saturday, say, you've got to point out these white supremacists. You have to point out these neo-Nazis.
I'm going to paint you a scenario for the White House, because I've had the opportunity to work with the Bush White House on many things, inside and outside the White House as a surrogate spokesperson and also someone for the RNC. When we had Hurricane Katrina and President George W. Bush, you remember, I believe that was one of his regrets. There was a lot of us that came around on the outside and the inside saying, you need to go there. You need to talk about this issue. And so there was a decision made at the top, which we had no control of, that he didn't go. And that was a mistake. When we had the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education for Topeka, Kansas, and I know you remember this all too well.
Yes,
we used to get a copy of the president's schedule. And so he was directed to go somewhere else. Many of us who are African American, we actually talked to Andrew Card, we talked to Carl, we said the president must go there. This is the 50th anniversary. If the president's saying that civil rights is the number one issue for African Americans' education, then he needs to go there. Guess what happened? His schedule got redirected and he was there. That can happen. So what happened, I give you some insight because I've been on the inside and the outside involved in a lot of things. So what happens is that we were able to have a dialogue with their the Office of Public Liaison and all the key people and touch points and even more influential people who are business people who are politically connected that would make calls. The people on the inside are afraid of him. I'm going to say that.
They're afraid of Trump?
Yes, they are.
Big time.
They probably, I can imagine the stuttering, oh, Mr. President, there's a fear that's inside.
Even General Kelly?
Well, I didn't say it, but General Kelly just went into this position. I mean, his body language told it all the other day. So this is a man of, General Kelly is a man of stature. He served this country. He's a hero. And to see that level of unbridled talking, that's not what even the military represents. So it'll be interesting to see how he dances with this. But this is going to be very difficult. And I'm not going to say everyone inside the White House is not capable. But I know that to have an audience of one every time you speak, that's a problem. Remember Tony Snow when he was the spokesperson
right.
for George W. Bush? And you remember some of the great spokesperson? There was never that. Very few times there was a walking back of comments. There was always key message points of which we received. So we knew if there was an issue at hand, we would get the talking points in our inbox. And we all were on one accord. And so this is what doesn't happen now. It's all over the map. But there are some good points in the administration.
What are some of the good points?
I think I love Ambassador Nikki Haley.
Okay.
I think she's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
What she did historically, just over a week ago, 15-0, sanctions, and she was able to get that done.
Right.
Now, she will credit the president, and he deserves it in terms of the administration standpoint. But what she has done in her leadership, she's done her tough talking, but she's also implemented soft diplomacy at the same time. And I've seen her just grow in this position immensely in such a short period of time.
I have too.
The key, Brad and Dan. She's had the freedom to do it.
Mm-hmm.
She's had the freedom to do it. Secretary Tillerson is trying to get his legs. But I did work for Undersecretary Tillerson when he was the chairman of ExxonMobil.
You did?
Yeah, I had a project.
What kind of a leader?
I think that Secretary Tillerson is transactional, and he's also...
Explain that.
In other words, he's very business-oriented in terms of cause and effect and what needs to be done. He's very much that way. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he has this... You hear how he talks. He's a Southerner.
Right.
He's very warm. I've met him a few times in Washington, D.C. Very warm, very engaging, but very clear on the objective at that time of ExxonMobil, which is number one, the most wealthiest company in the world. But he also had a mandate that he gave to all his employees. I remember in my project, which involved renewing the 75-year contract in Abu Dhabi, the oil contract, and we did a women's initiative in which I had to pull together 26 of the most powerful women in the Middle East and the Gulf. And the word I got from the top was to a girl in Windsor, Connecticut, failure was not an option. So I heard it one time. So when I got my certificate at Cornell in leadership, I did a whole competitive analysis and comparative analysis of ExxonMobil and his style of leadership. So I knew failure wasn't an option, and it was a very successful project.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, they're still working obviously in the UAE. But so these things, yeah. So I think he needs the opportunity to do his job.
Mm-hmm.
A special guest.
Yvonne Renee Davis joining us, 888-574-2723, our telephone number if you'd like to join in on the discussion.
This morning, for the first time,
mm-hmm.
I was very upset
yes.
with President Trump.
Oh, yes.
I was upset because he came on later instead of, as you said in the beginning, and what really, really, I just knocked me out. Maybe not everybody, but when he was talking about the alt-left and calling some of the white supremacist protesters, quote, very fine people, I can't understand how anybody could say something like that. And this really upset me.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this on the early part of the program this morning.
Yeah, did you have a chance to watch this press conference? It was just a stream of rambling that was going on, emotional, tyrannic style. And so I can't give him a pass on any of it. Maybe he meant there was fine people at the protest that were just nice people there, but the same group took sticks and beat a young black boy. You know, and of course the death should trump everything, not a play on words, but the death of this woman should have made everybody pause, but instead he was focused on something else. So his focus is off. And I don't know how you redirect that, but when you have that man that was condemning the marriage relationship between Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump and calling him a Jew and the way he was saying like it was cursing, I think that's his son-in-law and his daughter converted to Orthodox Judaism. That should have been condemned, but he was quiet. So if he was quiet in that regard, that's a problem. And you're talking about Jews in America, Jews abroad, Jews throughout the world that I'm sure are quite mortified. I know they are, because it harkens back to a time. Blood and soil, Brad and Dan? Blood and soil? And so when you look at this and know that when you see these groups, these hate groups, these terrorist hate groups that have hung my people from trees, that by looking at a white woman, you were done. I mean, Curtis's story, you know, in terms of his life. You know, people, when you grow up in Alabama or those places where the heart of injustice was there, I mean, for anyone to just kind of poo-poo it over.
Dan, we're starting to get some calls in here.
Yeah, we'll go to the phones after the hard break. We have about a minute and change. Yvonne,
yes.
Can President Trump survive this?
He's had some interesting lives right now. He's been able to survive quite a bit. I think the Republican silence is interesting right now.
Although they've started to speak up.
Well, some have spoken up. I know that on the other networks, I think there was one congressman that came on one of the other networks the other day. But he's surviving right now. And so I would say he's surviving right now. I because we don't know what will happen tomorrow. Something will happen in the news. The crazy guy in North Korea may do something, and then we're off that. You got to remember, we all remember news cycles, how
right.
they go.
Right.
North Korea was the number one issue. Now we're on Charlottesville. We don't know what next week will bring.
Mm-hmm. Which, in a sense, could be good for him if it gets the country's focus off of this. It might not be good for the country, but it might be good for him.
Well, we cannot run the nation on one person.
Right.
This is the United States of America.
Brad, before we go to the phones, this is what I'm getting, and I want to respond on Facebook.
Yes,
so I'm getting this, for example.
Yes.
Bill writes, this is all anti-Trump propaganda. It's even worse when you don't challenge this because you don't want to be seen as an evil sympathizer. What do you say to that?
Anti-Trump propaganda. Well, I never speak against the president, any president that's sitting in office, but we need to call it out like it is. It's wrong. Wrong is wrong, period. I was very much a George W. Bush loyalist and still am. But when Katrina happened, we knew that was wrong and we called it out. So you have to be able to call right and wrong, wrong. So it's not about propaganda. I mean, you know, that's just not about that. That's my direct response. This is not about that.
Let's go
in Russia.
Let's go to Jerry in Hamden. Jerry, good morning. Good morning.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, Jerry.
How are you there?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. I think that listening to you talk about the situation and what you just said a few seconds ago, that you were an ex-Bush supporter, but I think you carry that on your sleeve. I think Donald Trump is doing a wonderful job. I support him 1,000%, mm-hmm. and I think in the long run, when this is all over, he's going to be stronger, and I think he'll be reelected again, and I hope he does. And I feel as though you people forget about KKK Byrd. We can go back in history, and there's so many Democrats that were racist. We can I can't name them all right now, but there's at least 20.
Okay, Jerry, let's let Yvonne
yes,
respond.
Yes, I mean the Republican Party was the party of Lincoln. Let's go back to history. The Democratic Party was supporting Jim Crow. And it was a shift because of the civil rights movement. So, sir, we have to always go to history when we talk about that type of situation. And when you talk about wearing it on a sleeve, I proudly wear what my service to a bipartisan president, Republican and Democrat. So it's I will never be apologetic for that. So he needs to step up now, sir, and that's the issue. He's been in office for 6 months, and there's a lot of things that are happening. He can go ahead and even take credit for the jobs and the stock market. And the reality is no president gets credit for that, not even Barack Obama. But he has to take leadership now. We are in a very precarious time, internal to this country and external to this country. We have the most serious security threat in the world right now at hand. We have to deal with that. We have internally social unrest. We must deal with that. So the good job still remains to be seen. So and I believe that he should have the opportunity to do that, but he has to wake up and answer to the people who elected him. And that's just not the 33%.
Elaine in Westchester. Elaine, good morning. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I appreciate the passion of your caller. However, I'd like to ask her directly, was she this vocal when President Obama did some very divisive things racially to this country as well?
Well, I would say that where I was vocal, because most of my focus has been on international, was
I'm going to interrupt you because you're having it both ways. I asked you something very specific. I'm listening to how please respect my voice. I asked you a specific question. This question was, I'm going specifically now, you are castigating President Trump for how he handled this situation. And you have every right to say that. I'm not going to give you my opinion on it because it's not relevant to the conversation. But I'm asking, were you equally as distraught over this as you were the way President Obama handled some racial situations? Now, I admit you have a lot of experience in what you do, but I have experience in things that I've done as well. So, you know, it's not just...
Okay, Elaine,
I'll answer the question. I think that when he handled the beer summit, remember that whole issue they had? I think that he was weak on that issue. I think that he could have brought that issue to another level to bring people
together. I think
the
question becomes, were you vocal on it at the time?
Well, here's the thing. I was vocal on it, but I wasn't on the radio for that. You got to remember, we're talking about this issue at hand. My emphasis, and when I'm on the air, I talk about international relations primarily. But I felt that that was very weak at that point because it didn't bring people together. The other critique that people will talk about in the black community, although people voted for the black president, was that, you know, how did African Americans really benefit economically, socially? The unemployment rate was still very high under President Obama. So there were some issues on that. So, yes, in that regard. But I don't want to be measured against one president to the other. The reality is he needed to do something, President Trump. He did not do it. So I'm not going to walk that back at all.
Okay.
So I could divide every social issue, but that's not what it is. And I critiqued President Bush the same way with regards to Katrina.
Let's go to Lou in Hartford. Lou, good morning. Good morning. Hello,
hey,
Lou. Are you there?
Dan, a pleasant Thursday morning. How are you?
Go ahead, Lou. Oh, this is the
one.
Lou. Yeah.
Lou, good to hear from you.
Yes.
Go ahead, Lou.
I just want to say very briefly, I would applaud Brad and Dan. You know, I'm tired of, very proud of journalism, proud of the media. But this issue of infotainment, where you appeal to the lowest common denominator in people, has got to stop for the sake of this glorious country. And I'm just simply saying it can be used to have some positive dialogue, the talk shows. I don't normally listen anymore. I want to bite my tongue to almost say that because I'm very, the bylines or whatever, I'm very careful what I'm listening to.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to buy and what's going on. So what I'm saying to you, congratulations for having Yvonne Renee Davis on. Very bright, has great integrity, and just listen with an open heart and with an open mind. And I applaud Brad and Dan and WDRC Radio and, I'll just sit back and listen.
Hey, Lou.
That come in.
Lou, before you sit back, would you do me a favor? Hold on the line after this call. We're going to a break. If you'd hold on the line, could you do that for me, please?
I certainly will, Dan.
Terrific. Thank you.
1-888-574-2723. A very, very special guest with us this morning.
She's got such a varied career, but also an international expert as far as foreign policy is concerned.
Absolutely.
Worked in the U.S. State Department, and she's from Connecticut, South Windsor, right, Yvonne?
Windsor.
South Windsor.
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 Yes.
Okay.
Shout out to Windsor.
All right. Yvonne Renee Davis, and she's in our Touchpoints Rehab Interview Chair. And, Brad, we're also taking phone calls for Yvonne at 888-574-2723.
And we got one from Mike in West Hartford. Mike, good morning. Good morning.
Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi.
I've been a big fan of you over the years.
Thank you.
But I have a little bit of disagreement. You know, I still love you. So.
That's okay. Love is a beautiful thing. At least we have it in our country the way it needs to be done.
I think Dan would might attest to this. I think George Soros' fingerprints were on some of this stuff that happened in Charlottesville. No doubt that there was hate, but people are pawns, people are sheep, and Soros knows how to manipulate them. This happened. If you ask me, this was a play that played out exactly how Soros would have wanted it to. And the reason why I say that, I mentioned before, shortly after Charlotte, on the radio here, about the rent-a-mob, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it bothers me, and mm-hmm. I hope you don't call it racist, but I was always upset about the violence that the 99 percenters and some of the Black Lives Matter people have wreaked on us. And when I say Black Lives Matter, a faction of the Black Lives Matter, you know, there's genuine people that were disturbed about police and how they, you know, deal with minorities. But then you had the rent-a-mob that infiltrated them and started causing violence. But anyways, I did not see the media dwell. I remember this one person dressed in black with a baton running up and smashing a window.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was all during protest after Trump got elected.
Mm-hmm.
This was happening all over the place. People were being shut down. Free speech was being shut down.
Okay, Mike, let her answer the question.
I'll say this. I don't know about that 99 percenter movement. I haven't heard of that before. I have read a lot about the three women, African-American women that started the BLM movement. And I am not aware of acts of violence that were officially aligned with the Black Lives Matter movement. However, I do believe there are individuals and people that have come together to incite, because we saw that during the campaign with President Trump when he was running for office. So I do believe that there are always going to be factions that come and disrupt and attempt to stop the discourse on the real issue. However, the reality is when we're dealing with neo-Nazi, white supremacy, KKK, we have to look at their history. They're, you know, the FBI has put out the report about what has happened and over the years in terms of not just protesting, but actually wanting to exterminate a group of people. We have, Brad, Dan, you know, we have a very strong Jewish community here in Connecticut. Is West Hartford one of the largest population of Jews in the nation, I believe? And to hear those things, we need to be abhorrent of that. And we
can I just interject because you brought up the Jewish population?
Yes.
I'm very closely, I have a close relationship with that situation. But in West Hartford, for example, I know for a fact, you know, there are a lot of Jewish people. There were Jewish realtors that would not allow anybody else but Jewish people to be taken on as clients, so that they were building a Jewish enclave, which is fine. But on the other hand, that's also hate and prejudice.
Well, I think any group that singles out to alienate another group willfully is wrong. But the Jewish community,
it's against the law.
Yes, it's against the law. But the Jewish community, the Italian community, the Asian community has practiced group economics for a long time. The only community that doesn't practice group economics, which is to come together and build their communities, is the African-American community. So that could be a whole nother show. So the reality is we do this tit-for-tat comparison that goes on. A woman died, so we have to address it. we're going to pick apart this one versus that one. Now, if someone from the other side died, what would the news be? It would still be wrong because it was a murder.
He was schizophrenic. What about the guy over there in Sandy Hook? And all of a sudden, we have a sick schizophrenic person, and all of a sudden you have Murphy and everybody else trying to take our guns away. It was a sick individual.
Mike, we're getting someone off topic, but Mike, thanks very much for the call.
Mike, I'm glad you called. Thank you. God bless you.
Well, you see, this is a...
Because I know people are going to be asking, what about Black Lives Matter? Because there's an element out there that believes that there's the element within Lives Matter.
Well, I'm not going to speak for black people. I'm not the spokesperson for black people in America. I'm not even a part of that movement. I respect how they came together. There's always going to be factions within any group, even the conservative movement from the right to the extreme right. You're always going to have these fringe elements that come in to destroy the message that was originally intended. So I'm not the responsible for that, and I'm not going to start that.
Right.
So I think it would be good maybe if you had someone from Black Lives Matter on to even give their perspective. You know, it might be a future show, but for me, that's not what I'm going to focus on in terms of that. And I know callers want to do that. I think it's one of those moral equivalency things. That's the new word everybody's using now, I see.
Moral equivalency.
The new term, everybody.
Moral equivalency?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I think that when people use two things, that's what I'm saying. People use two moral rights to make a right, and really they cancel each other out. The reality is there was a wrong situation that happened. We needed leadership from the president. I think it could have calmed it down a lot more quickly. And so we're still talking about it. Now I'll take the other side for a moment. The media, once they get something, they're like a pit bull. You all are media, you know that. They grab onto it and they're never going to let it go. And so they keep going and going and going and going. And so sometimes there isn't that balance. So you do need to be.
And they don't like.
Right. And if they don't like, and here's the thing, if someone's going to get Donald Trump, President Trump, it's probably going to be the media because they keep everything and they keep bringing it back. So that's why there's such a showdown. And that's the unfortunate aspect of this situation and this time with journalism.
Challenge. Now you're a Republican. Do you feel, and you worked in the Bush administration, you also worked in the Obama administration, worked with them.
Yeah.
Do you feel that the Republicans get a fair shake from the mainstream media?
I think that it depends on what your political bent is. I do believe because there tends to be more things that come out in the media from Republicans that people socially don't like. So there tends to be a bent that way. But it depends on what you're watching. Are you watching Fox News? Are you watching CNN? Are you watching MSNBC? And so that's what happens.
Because you know what gets people irritated? For example, we always hear that the Republican Party is the party of big business, and yet you see big business donating in huge numbers to the Democratic Party,
that's right.
And it doesn't seem as if the media brings that out.
I think that both parties have problems, period. And the people in the middle are the ones who are suffering. And so a situation that's happening now is an opportunity for, I believe, both sides to come together and say, how do we stop this? You know, has Senator Schumer reached out to Mitch McConnell and say, how do we resolve this issue? This is an issue that deals with our nation. I don't know if they had a conversation. I can't say. But I think there are opportunities. You know where there was bipartisan agreement over that sanctions bill? That law that
right.
The president had no choice but to support. So that was overwhelming support. So there are moments. But the reality is in politics, there's political expediency, too. I think Republicans are very concerned about 2018.
We've got our special guest with us, Carmelo from Windsor, on the line. Carmelo.
Where'd he go?
Carmelo.
Sounds like that dial tone.
Dove sei, Carmelo?
Did we lose Carmelo?
Dove sei?
Okay. And we've got, is it Frank? Frank on the line from Watertown. Frank, good morning, good morning.
Good morning, my dynamic duo.
Good morning.
And good morning, Carmelo. Look, one of the things...
Yvonne Renee Davis is our guest.
Renee Davis. Carmelo, she was all set to go, and then all of a sudden
he disappeared.
He disappeared.
Oh,
into the
okay.
stratosphere.
Sorry about that, Renee.
That's all right.
That's
go ahead.
Look, I was a police officer in Watertown, Connecticut.
Yes, sir.
Really, it's kind of like a white community. We are integrating a little bit more. And never had that much interaction with blacks and stuff like that. But I moved to Florida, and my daughter has a house down there, which was mine. We have I have a black neighbor across the street. His name is Dave, a limo driver, a Jamaican guy on the right, and another black fellow and one white girl in between us. And we get along so well. Down there, we have a block party in the wintertime. All the neighbors come together. They bring something. Such nice people.
Yeah.
And it just gets me that it seems, and that's, Florida's kind of like the South in a way, but they're so friendly down there. And I see this going on television, and I'm saying, for one thing, the police should not let these groups get at each other.
Yes.
And look, if somebody's coming there with a helmet on and a club and a shield, they should be taken away. Because you're not a demonstrator, you're a rioter.
Exactly.
When you got clubs, and you know what? There should be no masks. You want to have a rally? No mask.
Yes.
You're hiding behind
they came
for
to
some
fight.
Reason.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about that as far as it goes with unshielding who these people are? And hiding behind masks and clubs and helmets, you're looking for trouble when that happens.
Yeah, they came to fight. They came to fight, and they were ready. And so that was the issue. They have a right to assembly, though. I mean, we have to uphold the Constitution. You know, I'm a structuralist that way. The freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. And, yes, the right to bear arms, but not in this situation. And so, we have to uphold the law in the Constitution in that sense and enforce it. The other thing is you talked about where you're being raised. I was raised from ages 10 to the time I left home at 23 years old in a community where everybody knew the Moss family.
Right.
That was the black family. A few black families in Millerton, and Dan, you know, Weebatuck Central High School is where I went to school, Sharon, Connecticut. Everybody knows my parents. And so we are a black family. And so we get along with everyone. So the point is, it's the opposite effect as well. You know, you go along, you get along when people come together. But in this regard, I remember at age 12 years old, we saw the Ku Klux Klan, on in Norfolk, Connecticut, Route 44, where that Catholic church is.
Yeah, I know exactly where it is.
So we saw them assembling right there with the hoods. And
that's a scary thing. Especially
and we saw them, and my dad and mom were taking our older brother off to school. And I remember seeing that. I remember that starkly. One other story about it. When I worked in Russia, as you know, and so one of the things the State Department briefed me in, they said at night, do not go out by yourself because the skinheads come out and your life will be in jeopardy. You have to be careful. People don't want to talk about those issues. I saw the skinheads in Red Square in open,
really?
Openly. Yes, you can't go by yourself. I never was escorted after dark by myself. I would run out, get food, go shopping. But as soon as it got dark, I was in the Metropole Hotel. I stayed where the spies used to stay during the war, World War II. And so that's reality. People don't want to talk about the amount of white supremacy and skinhead behavior that goes on in Russia that nobody talks about. Yeah. And the State Department is well aware of it.
Hey, thanks for the call, my
great
friend.
Call.
Thank
thanks,
you. Carmelo is on the phone now.
Hi, Carmelo.
Hello.
Hello. I love your name.
Up with me. Thank you. Yvonne, it's good to have a good neighbor on the radio here.
Yeah, in Windsor.
You know, it's a terrible thing that I know we allow free speech, but allowing any kind of hate speech, I honestly blame people that allowed the Ku Klux Klan, the Nazis. I mean, I can't believe they're even allowed to demonstrate. I mean, there's no reason for that. They tried doing that after World War II. I mean, they'd be getting themselves, beaten to death, if that was the case. But you're right. I mean, in Alabama, when those things happened, people were, they were hanging human beings from trees. Those types of groups should not be allowed to assemble ever in the United States. There's no place for that. And the fact that we have these statues, commemorating Confederates and Robert E. Lee, it doesn't make sense. It's not like, you don't go to Germany and they're celebrating Hitler because he's history. That kind of history.
But Robert E. Lee was not Hitler.
I understand that. I understand that, Brett.
The thing that I'm concerned about, and I'm concerned about American history, good and bad. I'm worried that they're going to change the history books, for example.
Well, history books should not. I'm not talking about history books.
Excuse me?
History books should be left alone. But as far as, like, commemorative statues and flags, those should not be flying in the public's, you know,
well,
in public.
Carmelo, where do we stop? Should we remove the name of the Woodrow Wilson Bridge over the Potomac in Washington because as president of Princeton University, he would not allow blacks into the university? FDR, the Japanese internment, do we remove the Japanese FDR Memorial in Washington, D.C. and take him off the dime? Where does it end?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I can't, as far as like Japanese Memorial, I don't know too much about that, but it's...
No, the FDR Memorial. I mean, he interned Japanese during World War II. He essentially enslaved
the
Japanese.
Yes. And this is the point with regards to presidents, and FDR had the biggest social programs that pulled us out of the Depression. And so, I mean, that was wrong. That was morally reprehensible, what he did. And so we have to be able to call our leadership to task. Historically, we need to be able to look at those things. And so if a president, my biggest concern with the current situation is his unwillingness to have a certain level of humility, to at least change the tone and the tenor, to begin to have something that allows people to come together. And so he becomes defiant. And so that's a whole nother issue that we really have to look at in regards to this issue.
Okay, yeah, Carmelo, thanks for the call.
Carmelo, thank you.
We have time for one more, I think, Brad.
Yeah, go ahead. One more call.
I think we've got Tim in Hamden.
Good morning.
Good morning, folks. First off, I'm very, this is a very, very interesting show. It's, unfortunately, it's kind of rare to hear a woman on talk radio, an African-American woman.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm delighting this very much. All of this talk, you know, Nazis and everything like that. By the way, I went and saw the movie Dunkirk. Oh, my God. If you haven't seen that, you need to see it in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's about fighting the Nazis. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen. You know, but again, most of these people, young people who showed up left and right in their 20s, not even understanding what chants like blood and soil mean.
Yes,
you know, that have very little, they don't even remember the, you know, the Vietnam War, let alone.
Tim, we have a minute left. Do you have a question?
My question is, why wouldn't the political instincts of Trump, he wouldn't denounce David Duke, you know, at the beginning of his campaign, and he's still, why is he getting away with this as a Republican? Why do you think he's getting away with this? Why is it so taking him so long to do something that seems like a slam dunk?
Thanks for the call.
I'm not his psychologist or psychotherapist. I'm not going to begin to say, but he has a personality trend that he just won't give in. He actually digs in if you challenge him. So I don't know how to answer that question. But I do believe that whoever has a conviction around this issue should speak up on it, and they should call him to task. I don't know that he's ever going to he's going to continue to double down.
I think you're going to see General Kelly say a few things.
I really hope so. I really hope so. He's a great leader. I really hope he can pull it together for this White House.
Yvonne, you've been so kind to come in for the last hour.
Thank you so much.
We enjoyed it.
God bless your audience. God bless America. We have to come together. We really do.
This is the time we do. You bet. Thanks, Yvonne.
Thank you so much.
And you'll come back.
Of course.
Great.
Yes, of course.